Hey, what's going on? It's Doug here. Just popping in before the episode. I'm going to keep this a little shorter than some of my other story times. In fact, it should be extremely short. So this episode was recorded live at Camp Phi, and this was, it was like a month or so ago, month and a half. Summer has just flown by, right? So live episode, we have some guests come up from the audience, and I can't remember exactly the topics that we talk about, but trust me, it's riveting, super memorable, obviously, and it moves fast. I have a couple people sit in with me and guest host. You know what? I could check that real quick. Give me 1 second. I could look. Oh yeah, I remember now. I had to go back and look, and Mr. Money Mustache, Kristen Knapp, who has guest hosted with me many times and is my frequent co-host for live streams, plus the folks from the audience. We have Amanda, we have Tyler, and Roxanne. And the cool part is Roxanne does stand-up comedy, and she did a set after the podcast. So that's going to be at the end. That's going to be the sound check portion. Because it was a live recording, the audio isn't as good as the studio is, but it was a live recording and there were 60 people in the room or something like that. So it's pretty good considering, and it's a fun episode. So again, we switch topics. It moves quickly. We stay on task because we only had an hour. So quick note, if you want to help support the show because we don't have any sponsors right now, there's a couple links in the description. You can donate via Buy Me a Coffee. You can take a look at some products that I recommend. There are typically affiliate offers, that sort of thing. But if you need to buy shoes or sleep supplements or maybe a chili pad or something like that, have a look and maybe you'll find that you can enjoy that sort of thing. In a few episodes, or maybe it's story time in an upcoming episode, I'll tell you about what I've been up to this summer. So I went on a trip to Yellowstone, hung out in the mountains some. I've been playing a lot of music and not doing a lot of work. So it's been fantastic. Time goes by so fast, you know. So summer has flown by. And just today, I was in Rocky Mountain National Park, drove up to the Trail Ridge store and Alpine Visitor Center. And yeah, it was just a great day. Just a normal Wednesday getting into the national park there. So like I said, I'll keep it brief and send it to the show. Thanks to all the guests that hopped on. Thanks to Kristen. Thanks to Pete. Like I said, Amanda and Roxanne and Tyler who sat in with us. Really fun recording with them, and I could have done, you know, whole episodes just chatting with them individually, but it is fun to do the live episodes like that. That's it. Let's get to the show. Thanks a lot. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today we're at Camp Phi Rocky Mountain Week 1.5, and we have a live audience here. And we'll bring a couple guests up here along the way, but I have Kristen Knapp and Mr. Money Mustache sitting with me. How are you guys today?
So good. This has been such a fun week.
How's the camp been going for you, Pete?
It's been a freedom-enhancing experience.
And you met so many cool new people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible.
One of the interesting things with this camp, it's something like 60% new people. So the name game was much more difficult than I thought. I thought over the years I was getting better at remembering names. I just met more people over the years. So all fresh new faces, and it was pretty tough. But we're going to hit a topic before we bring the guest on, and that is the cheap versus frugal idea. And I think there's been a thread of that conversation going on through the whole few days we've been here. So Pete, we were chatting earlier, and I'm curious, like, how do you view that? Did you start thinking of like cheap versus frugal as you were spending money more recently, or is that something that was kind of in the back of your head for a little bit?
Well, originally I didn't really know the difference. I always thought like I was living a pretty fancy life because I grew up in an even less fancy life. But once I started being public about this, you know, blogger stuff, I started getting a lot of, you know, accusations like, why would you want to live this cheap, terrible life just so you can retire early? So then I started trying to profess about it basically just out of self-defense. I'm like, no, no, not that cheap stuff. Like, frugal and cheap are different, see? But I really do believe there's a huge difference. And the main difference is just that cheap is when you're making a compromise and your life gets less good in order to save money. And frugal is when you're changing a life decision for the better and it just happens to cost less money. And so it's a win-win.
Would you say, though, that people have different, like, is that an opinion or is that an actual, like, definition? Like, if I looked it up in the dictionary?
Oh, I don't know. I
mean, I've never looked it up in the dictionary.
Yeah, I think it's vague enough to be universal because you can't really nitpick.
Because for me, frugal just feels like the smart way of doing it. And cheap is just kind of like, I don't know, kind of, I'm with him on that, the cheap definition.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it gets labeled, like, both of them get mislabeled by the public because some people just think, oh, that's a little too frugal. If you really understand the word frugal, there should be no such thing as too frugal because it stops before anything bad happens.
Right. And I'm trying to think of specific, like, cheap habits that I have, and they stick around even though I know better. And I'm sure I have a ton. Maybe I'll think of some. I'll buy you time. I'm going to ask you this question in a second. But I'll buy stuff because it's a good deal, even though I don't really need it. And maybe it's like an inferior product, and I'll buy it because, wow, that's such a good deal. Surely I should buy this. And then I end up with like something I don't really need, or like it breaks early, or something cheap like that. So.
I can think of an example from recently. And I actually, after this happened, I asked a few people in the community, like, would you do this? Like, is this too cheap? Or would you, you know, would you go there? So a few months ago, I was with a friend. We were going to an event. We needed to get a greeting card. If you go to a CVS or a Walgreens, they're on every corner. Greeting cards aren't inexpensive. They're like $6 or $7, which is just insane. But it's on every corner. And it's easy. It's convenient. It's right there. I'm willing to pay for convenience. This particular friend was like, but the Dollar Tree is 10 minutes away and we can go to the Dollar Tree and get, well, at the end of the day, I wasn't driving, so I let this person win, but it made me nuts because I was like, but there's a Walgreens right on the corner. So that felt cheap to me, but I don't know. What do you think?
It was like misguided cheapness because they spent more driving there than they would have, you know, if you could just walk to Walgreens, it's worth $6 to not drive 10 car minutes.
You know, and I think everybody might have an opinion on that, but for me, it was worth the convenience and the time to go to the corner store.
Right. Even if it did cost more, and even if the dollar store did save money, it's still better to do the close thing, I think.
Yeah.
Would you have done the close thing? Or would you have driven to the dollar store?
I think I would have done the close thing. Yeah. Okay. Nowadays, I'll definitely like pay for convenience, and I hate driving or sitting in traffic or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
And then to make this the other example, what would a frugal solution to this be? Well, the frugal person maybe would have thought of it in advance and got the greeting card from some extra cool place, like a friend who makes greeting cards, and then they bring it there, and then it's like better, but maybe it costs less, or maybe they wanted to give the money to their friend rather than Walgreens. So it's like all the winning without having to make a compromise.
Or picked it up several days in advance when the Dollar Tree was on the way.
Yeah, or made it. You know, like if you make a cool greeting card, you can put more eagles on it, and then it's therefore better.
I'm not sure if we should talk about this, but you have a fine shirt on, and I'd like to hear a little bit of the story. If you stand up for a sec to let everyone in here see it. Yeah. And for the listeners at home, it's an eagle on there, but keep going.
Yeah,
a lot of American flag stars and stuff on here, too.
Okay.
And I just have an half ironic and half real love of eagles and eagle iconography as a naturalized citizen to this country. And it's also a really badass bird. So I just, each year I get a bit more ridiculous with the eagle things that I collect and make.
Yeah.
I got this shirt partly because it was on Amazon Vine for free, but partly.
For free?
Wait. I think that's frugal because I really wanted it anyway.
That's cheap, man.
But secondly, because I was trying to make a music video and I wanted a really like an eagle theme going in this music video.
Okay.
And this is like the most eagly shirt in that.
It's pretty eagly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you want to talk about the music video? That's kind of a big,
interesting
thing. Oh,
yeah, because the people who are listening to this podcast should definitely check out the video. Okay, so the reason it exists is because the creative geniuses, Alan and Katie Donegan from the Donegans or the Rebel Finance School, had a whole album produced of fire-themed songs, and they like hired musicians throughout the internet and wrote lyrics and just put a year into making this thing, all kinds of money too. And it's a hilarious and really well-made the songs are all genuinely good. But one of the songs on this album happens to be called Mustachianism. Mm. And it's like a summary of some of the principles that I write about, which I was like very touched. It was like the ultimate birthday present. So anyway, one time recently, Alan and Katie were visiting me and we decided to make a music video to go with this song. And it's like a heavy metal type song, like hair band style. So we made this video where it's all over the top, like doing bike wheelies and... You know,
did you guys have to hire like a huge crew? Like how many people were involved in the making of this?
It was mostly just me and Alan filming each other or ourselves. And then we recruited a couple friends at the headquarters to be extra musicians because we had to like do a scene where we played through the song and I was the drummer, Alan was the bassist, and we had another guitar player. And then we had some people filming and running the drone and stuff. But it was just whoever happened to be at the co-working space that day. So it was all done on a budget of zero.
I can't wait to see it.
So we'll link up, but... It's on YouTube, right? So people can check it out.
Yeah, right. If you just look for a Mustachianism music video, it'll probably be the first result.
You'll put it in the show notes too, right? The link?
Yeah, someone will. Yeah.
Someone will.
It'll definitely be there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to cheap versus frugal. So any other thoughts around it? Or if people are like battling this and they're like, I have some cheap habits, like what are some strategies we can use?
I'll give another example. This caused some conflict in my marriage a few years ago. It's my husband's birthday, and for his birthday, he wanted to get a new bike. And being the frugal person that I am, and I think mine might come from, you suggested you had a little less than growing up, it sounded like. Mm-hmm. Same. So I've just always was more frugal out of necessity than necessarily that I was wired that way. I just had to be. So my immediate gut response to him saying, I'm going to get a new bike, because I was like, well, what's wrong with your current bike? Like, it works, right? Like, why don't you just go get it tuned up? What do you need a new bike for? That didn't go over very well. He's, first of all, not really into this advice stuff to start with. But it taught me, and around this time, Die With Zero was coming out, and we were starting to have more conversations in the community about spending on things that truly bring you joy. And I realized after the fact, I'm like, he's going to get out and be riding his bike. He's going to love it. It's going to make him so happy. He doesn't. He's not spendy. This was a spendy guy, be a different story. He's not spendy. So I apologize, but that was definitely sort of a cheap habit, you know, something that came from being, yeah. So I've gotten over it, I think, by honestly hearing a lot of people in the community talk about this exact thing, realizing that if it brings you joy, if it makes you healthier, if it allows you to spend more time in the community, if it does anything that brings good, it's good, right?
Any thoughts?
What was the exact phrasing of the question again?
Tips if people want to get out of the cheap mindset and think about things in a more frugal way or neither one of those altogether. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you have any examples, anything silly like that you've done.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have lots of examples. And I feel like as I get older, I try to keep looking at myself and, you know, ask the people around me if there's anything I'm doing that's weird, like weird in a bad way instead of just normal weird. You know, you just learn over time if you're trying to pay attention to feedback. Like nowadays, I think if I went back, you know, to my married days, I would have been more careful not to nitpick about stuff. You know, like I really liked riding to the grocery store, riding my bike there. She didn't. And I'd be like, oh, you know, why don't you try riding to the grocery store? It's great. You know, like your spouse doesn't need to hear that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you can do the stuff you want. They can follow you if they want, or they cannot do it. It doesn't matter at all. And that's the real thing. Like as you get older, you get more mellow about that stuff. And so I feel like I'd be a better, you know, like, and we both have mellowed. Like she and I are still really close. We've mellowed over the years and we're like, yeah, I remember when we used to be like that. And we kind of laugh at our 20 and 30 year old somethings. And that's fine. You know, it's okay to grow as you get older. And then one example where I still am cheap and I'm working on it is like, I can't get over like wasted, you know, utilities and energy stuff. So like if I have a guest at my house and they're taking, you know, like someone turns on the shower and just leaves it running to warm up. in my house, the shower is right over top of the water heater, so it's warm in like 3 seconds. And so it's like shh, and then they're like maybe brushing their teeth and like using toilet and like, and I'm like, the shower, and they're like, no, don't even say anything. Like just don't let myself say anything because they don't hear that. And I know that it's like inconsequential, right? It's not what I would do, but they don't need to hear that. And that's the kind of stuff, but it's okay that I'm not restraining myself, but even better, I don't even want to feel those feelings. I want to be like, yes, we have plenty of water. Like that's what I want to feel when that happens. So I'm still working on that.
I relate very hard. I'm the same way with turning lights off.
Oh, and yeah. Lights, I'm over that because LEDs, they make light. You could leave your lights on 24 hours a day and nothing changes in your electric bill because they're so efficient. Now, leaving a car on is different, or leaving a shower on, because that's like 1,000 light bulbs running at once or something.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I have a story related to the shower water heating up.
Were you the person he was talking about?
I don't think Doug's taking any showers at my house. Yeah.
Not that you know of. Oh, yeah, okay. So Elizabeth, my wife, doesn't listen to the show, so I could safely tell this story. So no one tell her. So we also were like, we're turning the shower on. It takes a few minutes for it to heat up. So we'll get a bucket and put it in the shower, and then we'll just save that water and we reclaim
water
stuff. Yeah. Yeah, we water stuff, use it for cooking, whatever, coffee. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. We don't. we use it to water plants typically. So, but that's our, I mean, it's saving a few gallons and like usually people just throw it away. So.
Yeah, and I would enjoy that, but I wouldn't, nowadays, the present me wouldn't dare suggest that to a partner because they probably are not interested.
It is. Yeah. We say it's like water chores before we take a shower. We have to like carry the bucket across the house. Yeah. It's ridiculous. I mean, when we talk about it, have you seen, Amy, have you seen the funnels in the...
I have not.
We hide them when people come over because it's ridiculous.
Totally. Okay.
So you recognize that this is kind of silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you actively trying to like stop? Like what would happen if you didn't do that when you went home? Would it pain you?
The peanut gallery would come out and be like, okay. No, it would be fine. It would be fine.
Maybe you should try it.
It's great if they agree on it. That's bonding them rather than driving them apart.
Okay. And we are like, we're watering our plants with that.
Yeah,
that's
fun.
Couple gallons.
Saving the planet together. It's
yeah,
very good.
Exactly. Okay. So that was a weird way to close out that section, but that's just the way it worked out. So we're going to bring our first guest up, Amanda. Cool. Welcome.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us up here. So it's your first campfire. I'll explain kind of why I invited you up. So it's your first campfire, right?
Yes.
You brought your partner. You've been retired for a few years.
Hopefully he hasn't run away.
you've been retired for a few years,
yes.
And then you've worked some other jobs, but very interesting overall. So we'll ask a few questions, but I'm curious, is your first Camp Fi, is it what you expected? How has it been going for you? Tell us about your experience so far.
Yeah, I was actually just talking to Keith. And this is his 18th Camp Fi, so kind of realized that, it's strange, but I think when I walked in, I felt a little bit like transported back to middle school, right? And walked into this like big community of people that were like talking and hugging and making plans to go to Argentina and like all of this stuff. And I was like, I don't know if I was literally about to just turn around and be like, let's head out. But it's been such a welcoming group, and I'm now making plans to visit people across the country. And it's been a really incredible experience. I don't know what you've put in the water here, but I'm definitely drinking the Kool-Aid and have been really, really grateful and touched. And I'm typically a pretty guarded person, but I've shared things that I've not shared with people, I work with every day. I have, and people have shared the same in return. So I'm just really grateful.
Can I ask how you first found out about it? And in addition, what made you kind of pull the trigger to come?
Sure.
What were you hoping to get?
In truth, I was hoping to get my partner a little bit more on board. But I think personally, I did really want to learn from, all of these esteemed, well-regarded, super smart, talented people, and just figure out if I was kind of on the right track. So, I think it's been multifaceted, but I've also been, frankly, a little lonely. I'm in Chicago and it's a huge city, but there's very, very few people there that are super familiar with Fi. We have a great Choose a Fi chapter, really active, but not a lot of people that are on this side of the journey. And so it's been really incredible to see and hear all of these conversations and meet real life people that have lived this. And I think that's kind of surprised me in a way, that it is real life and you guys exist. And
was it your local Choose Fi group in Chicago where you heard about Camp Fi?
So I think I heard about it originally. I heard about a couple of the different conferences, economy, and some of the larger scale, the cruises. And I was like, I don't think we can commit to that. But once I heard of Camp Fi, I thought, my partner loves camping. I hate that. I don't think it's real camping outdoor. And then so after hearing a few of those details, I was really excited to get to something a little bit more intimate, mm-hmm. like a smaller space. And I thought that would be a good kind of testing ground for us.
Yeah.
So.
I think this is a good entry point because yes. it is a more manageable size.
Agreed.
There's no way you get out of this weekend without having developed some great new friendships. It's impossible.
So there's so many directions I want to go. We can't spend, I want to interview you for the whole time, right? But we can only focus on a couple things. So you retired a few years ago, but you've been doing some other jobs along the way. Can you talk about that? Why are you doing other stuff and not just not working?
Yeah, one thing I've learned here from a few people is you're a great quitter. You're so good at quitting jobs. There's some folks here that are I've been in my role for decades or at my company for decades, and I can't believe you were so brave to and I was like, you don't even know how many corporate jobs I've quit. But even since retirement, so I retired from my corporate role in 2021. After that, I became an adjunct professor for a couple semesters. Tried that, liked the students, didn't necessarily, academia was not right for me. Now I'm doing fitness instruction, like that so far. But I think I've just been really, and I also started my own independent HR consulting business. That was great for a while, and then it wasn't. So I think it's just been really freeing. And I think somebody mentioned this week something about, I think Pete, you were talking about some of the lessons that you've learned. And one of them that really stuck with me is that I think so much of my career was driven by fear and what I'm missing out on and what, my next role would have been probably a head of HR, VP, or even C-suite executive. And I always thought I wanted that, but I think it was more driven by the fear of I should want that, and what would happen if I didn't do that. And so now that I'm retired, it's I don't have a fear of quitting. I can try something and nobody cares. I mean, and that's a really freeing thing in a good way. I think I was so worried that nobody would care before, but now really nobody cares, and that's great.
Yeah. What did your family think when you quit corporate?
I really haven't asked them. I don't know if that says more about me. I do come from a pretty traditional, my mother was a homemaker. My father had kind of a traditional job that he stayed at for 30 plus years. But they really haven't pressured me to live a traditional life. And I think I've been really fortunate in that way. I'm not married. I don't want kids. And so I think that's been really freeing to just have more of the expectations have come from probably me and the corporate world. So, yeah, I think in that way, it just really freed me to just do whatever I wanted to do. And I don't think I realized how much I cared about what other people thought, what my teams thought, what my superiors thought until I left. And then it kind of opened up this whole new world to me. I didn't know I liked to cook or clean. I had never done the laundry before. And thank you, David, for all those years. He's amazing. I'm with this renaissance man of he cooked for us every day. I had a pretty demanding career, and he cooked and cleaned, and I still haven't taken the garbage out. That's the one thing I haven't learned how to do. I don't know where the garbage bags are. He was staff on a project last week, and I was literally hey, where are the trash cans? I think I should take this out. So yeah, I mean, I never gardened before, and now I love gardening, and we've fostered animals for a long time, but now I'm let's take the litter of kittens and puppies. And so it's just, you get to do so much more than I ever thought I was capable of doing. I think professionally I knew I was capable of a lot, but now I think I'm capable of a lot more from a humankind perspective. I care much more about not the size of my bank account, but what I'm going to do with the resources I have. So,
Pete, do you have any questions? Is it okay if you don't?
No, I don't. I
have one.
Pulled into that story.
And if this is too personal, you don't have to answer this. But my partner, my husband, isn't really into the Fi stuff, and it's created a few challenges. And I'm just kind of wondering if you could speak to any of that at all, how it affects your relationship.
My partner has always been the type, and I'm not just saying this because I don't even know if he's in the room, but he's never been the type to push or pressure me. He is a fitness fanatic, incredibly fit, incredibly in shape. I didn't go to a gym for literally the first 10 years we were together. And he would, you know, wake up at 6 a.m. and like have the taxes done, take the dogs for a walk, get his like run in, and then, you know, prep for a triathlon or whatever he was doing. I have no idea because I was asleep till like 10:30. And he never once was like, do you want to come? Like if I wanted to come, I would say I wanted to come, you know? And so I think I've been really fortunate where he's loved that I love this. And I think he's really encouraged me from the standpoint of like, you can learn. Like I didn't know what a traditional versus Roth was 5 years ago, literally. And this year I did my own taxes and actually volunteered to do people's taxes. Oh, wow. And like, I think he's more proud of that stuff. And I hear him telling other people, and it's not his thing, but I know that he's supportive of it. And I mean, deep down, we're nothing alike, and I really want him to get on board with this. But I'm trying to learn from him and not pressure him to do the same. Although I did drag him here. So.
He hasn't run off yet, I don't think.
I hope not.
Do you have any tips for people that want to bring their partner to an event like this where, you know, maybe they're not on board, they're hesitant? There's a lot of people, like that can be overwhelming for some folks too, but yeah, do you have any tips on that?
Well, one, do the Rocky Mountain. Well, it's beautiful here. I mean, if you love the outdoors, we actually made a longer week out of it. He's super excited. I don't know why, to climb these stairs tomorrow at 5 a.m. So I think things like that actually got him really excited. So I would say that's a big tip, is like, is there a commonality? And I was just telling Keith and Tyler this, like, I really thought I would come here and I had very specific questions on like, what do I do for my drawdown strategy or portfolio allocate, and very technical. I think some people have said probably too advanced for like everyday conversations, but I've gotten so much more out of the like, so what do you like to do on the weekends? Like, I love gardening too. You know, that sort of like, I love squash and I would love to learn how to grow pumpkins in Chicago. I think I've really surprised myself with like connecting on completely non-fire-related things here. And that is, I think, what my partner knew before me, is that I'm going to come and I'm actually going to meet normal, nice, friendly people. And he certainly has. And I would say that's a really big tip, is sell the people part, not the like, we're going to talk numbers all day, every day.
Right. Because we don't.
It hasn't been that at all. Yeah. And actually, I was surprised by that. Positively.
I call it FI magic. It's like when you put a bunch of FI people together, no matter where we are, what we're doing, who the group is at the time, everybody always gets along amazingly. And I can't exactly tell you why that is, but it never fails.
100%. So if I remember right, you and your partner listened to a podcast and that sort of gave him a good example of something he maybe would like to do, and maybe that gave him the push to actually like come to this. Because it's several days here. Can you talk about either the podcast or why it impacted you guys to like pull the trigger to come here?
Absolutely. And thank you for reminding me of that. That was, he didn't necessarily listen directly to me, but I was sent a link to this incredible podcast that happened to have a couple, Darren and Jolene, who are very well known in this community, that were normal, nice, funny, smart people that happened to be FI and happened to be traveling the world and hiking and spending their time outdoors. And I think that really helped him realize that there are people like him that do this. And when we found out that they were going to be, we were actually in Spain with them at the same time, but on kind of an extended vacation of our own, they were coming to Camp FI week one. We met up and kind of have a conversation about trying to meet up before this week. And so we got to meet them. It was only for an hour, but it was, again, such a great experience of an immediate feeling of we're going to be friends for a really, really long time. And I guess, at least for me, I've not experienced that very often in my work communities, in my personal life. So that's really exciting to know that this one commonality really does lead to all of these other kind of synergies with people that are just like-minded in a way that you know is going to resonate and gel. Yeah. You know, there's so many people where I would never travel with them, you know? And I'm like, Darren, sign us up the next wherever you're going for, you know, a month. And I think that's a really incredible, special thing that I haven't seen in a lot of the groups I've been a part of. And so that's I think, what helped convince me for sure, because, you know, I had never been to an event either, but definitely my partner as well. Yeah.
Perfect.
I hear a very similar thing at every event I go to from the new people. They're like, man, it's only been 24 hours and I thought people were going to be trying to sell me annuities or something. And, you know, and I already feel like I have all these new best friends and we haven't even talked about money.
Yeah.
And it never fails. That's why, mm-hmm. like I said, I call it five magic. I don't know how else to explain it. But do you think you'll come to another event?
I mean, I was just asked if I was going to the Midwest one, and I checked my calendar immediately. So I think, yeah, it's definitely in the cards.
It's the best. You get addicted. Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. All right, any final questions for Amanda? All right, thanks, Amanda.
Good chatting
with you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and I've been playing music with our next guest. This is Tyler.
Yeah.
Hey. The drummer that I've been talking about for a long time, and we do pretty good together, I think.
Yeah, it's mainly like early '90s hard rock and 7/4 kind of stuff, but it's a fun time. We play in this kind of older defunct ATM that they gutted, and they put a couple of drum kits in there, and they have plugins for your amps and stuff, and we just basically dick around for 3 hours.
it's
a lot
fun.
Of fun. Yeah,
it's very good. Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
So I think we met at a party at HQ, maybe, mm-hmm. Touch Base, and just started talking, and then, the rest is history.
Yeah, it was like the Christmas concert, so I played a solo finger style thing.
Okay, cool.
It really knocked his socks off, and he
it was a dueling banjos team.
I gotta
play with this man.
So, this is your first campfire, right?
Yeah, and with my wife, Margo, who you can hear laughing in the background.
Yeah, so how's it going for you guys?
Great. Yeah, it's we have never done a Phi destination kind of event. And, I recently started a group down south of Denver just for the connections of it. And coming here, it's like a giant. It's like two times that for like three successive days of just talking, chatting, making good friends. We even found some people who are going to come to the group, probably Tommy and Tish. Hope you are here. And
can you tell us what the group is called and your intentions are to do with the group?
I'll
jump in real quick.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry. Jumping
it's okay. It's like a well-orchestrated.
Sorry.
So we asked Tyler up because he's trying to build a community similar to the one that we have in Longmont, where there's just like people around and, any given day you may be able to like give someone a buzz and say, hey, let's go for a hike or whatever. So it's interesting because, like, Pete, it took you a while to, like, pull that together. There's many people working on it. But you're trying to do a similar thing, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people in the Denver area. So that's exactly the thing. Now ask your question.
Oh, yes. So what is it called, mm-hmm. and what kind of events are you guys doing, and how's it going so far?
Yeah, it's going great. So the name of it, we're on meetup.com. Basically, I ripped off, there's a fella in Lafayette, which is north Denver, close to Longmont. A guy named Braden runs a group up there that I attended a couple sessions of. So I just basically ripped off his format because he does a great job there. So our group is called SoCo Mustachians. There's no Co Mustachians. North Colorado Mustachians is a Southern Colorado Mustachian / Filands Ranch, because where we live is called Highlands Ranch. Mm. And that's Scott Trench's name. So he's a great branding expert on that front. But we meet up once a month. We've been doing this since January of this year. I created a Discord similar to the one that you guys up in Longmont have, and we just schedule hangouts and meetups outside of, our regular monthly meetups. So we'll do trivia nights, hike, bike, go to shows, book clubs, art meetups, all that kind of stuff. So it's been going great, and all of this was birthed, not to bring things down, but all of this was birthed out of, I lost my best friend in October of last year, so it was just a void and a devastation. I just was longing for connection and, meeting with people, and we'd been into five since like 2015, but again, had never done any of these kinds of things like campfire economy, so I said, you know, this is an easy foot in. I'm, you know, the introvert's introvert. So this was an easy way to meet people. And I think there's definitely a need down south and in the Denver metro area. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. I actually got to go hiking with Tyler. Did you know that?
Yeah,
December. Yeah, I was out. A group got put together, right?
Yeah, Mount San Anitas. It was a beautiful day. Another benefit of FI, you can just go in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
On beautiful trails in Boulder. Yeah.
And as soon as I saw when we got here, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I went hiking with that guy before. Look at that. What a small world.
Yeah. So, Kristen, you do the Choose FI St. Louis.
Right.
And talk about like how you put together the different activities. I know one that Tyler, that they're not doing yet is the, what is the
case
analysis?
Studies?
The case studies, yeah. The case studies,
okay.
Yes.
So honestly, after my first camp, I loved it so much. And I got home and I'm like, oh my gosh, how long do I have to wait before I get to hang out with these people again? And I realized that there was already a Choose FI St. Louis group with all these people in it, but no one was doing anything with it. I guess at one point it had been fairly active, but then between COVID and I guess the guy that was doing it moved away and it was just, nothing was happening. And you hear people say in the community sometimes like, oh, well, the group in my area just isn't very active. Well, it takes somebody stepping up and actually like taking charge, right? So I'm like, well, heck, I want this to happen. I'm just going to do it. And I'm pretty good at organizing and I like planning. And so it was a natural fit. So I just took it over it and got consistent with it. And we started with the every Thursday, first Thursday of every month. And in the beginning, we were kind of doing like brewery hangs and stuff like that, which was fun. But then we started doing the case studies. And Diana Merriam was kind enough. She runs this Cincinnati group and also the founder of the Economy Conference, she had put together a PowerPoint template. I'm not very techie. I mean, I say that very out loud. I don't even know how to do a spreadsheet. I think I just got my FI card rejected. But anyway, she sent the template and I just send it to my people and they just kind of fill in the blanks basically. So then we started doing those on the first Thursday of the month, but then people were missing the brewery hangs. So now we do two events a month. Case studies, usually we have about 40 people per event for those. And then the brewery hangs, we kind of have our regulars anywhere from like 12 to 20 that come and hang out. And it's continuing to grow and we get new people all the time and it's pretty amazing.
And then, Tyler, do you do the same sort of schedule where it's like always the third Sunday or something like that?
It's not. It's so I rent a room in the library. They loan me a room, so I'm at their mercy. But we're trying to maybe get it towards the maybe fourth Sunday of. It's always on a Sunday, but we're going to try to get it. Yeah, fourth Sunday of the month, basically.
Gotcha. Interesting. And what's the pro of like the library versus like a brewery hangout?
Well, so we use the libraries for our case studies because they have the AV equipment and they're free, right? Mm-hmm. Parking's usually pretty good and all that kind of stuff. In the beginning, when we were doing the brewery hangs and we had a smaller group, it worked. But then as we started getting like over a dozen or so, the people on this end of the table couldn't hear the people on this end of the table and like yelling across the table. I'm like, this doesn't work very well. So we realized if we actually wanted to have real conversations, we needed to be somewhere quieter. So the library works really great for that. The only problem is we can't really hang out and drink a bunch of beers at the library, right? And some people want to be able to do that. And also, we have to be gone by 8 o'clock. So by 7:55, the library ladies are like totally giving a side eye. So I'm like, okay, everybody, we got to go, which is kind of awkward. That's one of the downsides of the library situation. So doing it on a Sunday afternoon would probably solve that, but mm-hmm. I work a weird schedule, so it's hard for me to do that.
Yeah, we usually reserve a little extra time. I do it for 2 hours officially, but block it for like an hour extra so that we don't.
Well, I don't want to give away any trade secrets here because we're already kind of in competition from what I hear.
Uh-oh. Can you elaborate on the competition?
Well, like I didn't realize Tyler had such a big thing going. Now I'm feeling kind of threatened because like so-called mustachians,
There's a guy in our group that's trying to do an HQ down.
Oh, that's what I was just going to say. So my trade secret is that you should look on Craigslist and find a dilapidated old building and make an HQ out of it.
We got a guy who's deep into real estate and he's looking for a deal. So I'll put him in touch.
But just don't expect it to be a profitable endeavor.
You're
going to be subsidizing it, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah.
Because five people are a little frugal, which means some of them are hesitant to sign up for a paid membership.
Yeah.
They just want to come to the free stuff.
Yeah. Well, this is a little interesting. Pete, like, how many members do you have? Like, can you talk a little bit about the monetary side? Because people imagine you're raking it in.
Oh, yeah.
Taxes are high, right?
Well, the property tax on the building, in Colorado or Boulder area where our building is, they charge you a lot more than a house of equal value. So we typically have about 50 to 60 paying members. It kind of fluctuates randomly, which is just enough to pay for like kind of the basic expenses of keeping that building going. And we, anything left over, my co-owners and I sort of pay ourselves interest because we basically lent the LLC money to buy the building in cash so that we wouldn't have a mortgage, which allows us to be self-insured and saves all this other money. So, but a lot of times there isn't money to pay us the interest and we're like, that's okay, we're still having fun with it. But really, you know, if it had more like 70 or 80 members, then it would be very consistent. And a real business, like it's pretty easy. Most co-working spaces have hundreds of members. We just don't do marketing. We don't have a sign on the building and we kind of like it like that. We like the speakeasy aspect. So it's like word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because it helps filter for nicer people. If, you know, they know about it from friends. We don't want people to be like, hi, I need a place to put my fax machine so I can spam people with my multi-level marketing campaign. You know? Yeah. We just want like five people.
Right, right, right. Well, Tyler, any big plans over the next couple of months with the group?
I guess we're going to, we have a number of people here, Amy Awella, I don't know if she's in here working. Oh, good. Yeah. She's almost finished the 2,000 piece puzzle. and Mike also from our group. I think we also have people who I think who have gone to week one of Camp Fi and are coming to week two after this. So I think one of the things we're going to talk about is just what we got from our experiences the next go round. But yeah, the case studies we definitely want to do. And I know it's such a vulnerable thing, but I've really liked them here, mm-hmm. the folks that were willing to do them.
All right. So, yep. Cool. Let's get something on the calendar for the drum box and maybe we'll play this coming week or
something. Gotta get this guy on bass.
Yeah.
And also let's have our groups meet somehow. Like invite us down and we'll like take a bus down.
Yeah, that's right. Party bus.
We can either have like a breakdancing battle.
Party bus. We'll get the drum set on there. But yeah. Rock it out.
Yeah. All right. Man. All right. Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate it. All right. Next up, we have Roxanne. And Roxanne, we've known each other for a few years. Like, I kind of forgot, but we met in Montana. Is that right? Or do you remember how
really?
We met?
Yeah. I think it was through YouTube.
Yeah.
Because we had YouTube in common for finance, which, you know, there aren't that many of us, but also the in the Venn diagram, Montana. So Doug lived in Montana for a while. I grew up there and lived there for a long time. So, yeah, had those in common. Met at FinCon a few times.
That's right.
It's been several years. So.
So you've been Lean Fi and you stopped working your corporate job. Can you talk a little bit about how you got into Fi and then sort of like not working and like the Lean Fi aspect of it?
Yeah. How far do you want me to go back? I'm a long time money person. Like ever since I was a little kid with like the three piggy banks and like stacking them up and counting everything and breaking my piles and counting them again. Oh, I'm an accountant. I don't know. Perhaps that led to that. But so I was always interested in finance. My parents weren't great with money. And so it was always really important to me to make some money and, you know, be able to keep it. And they were pretty frugal. I learned a lot of frugal stuff from them. But yeah, I got my degree in accounting, dinks for several years with my ex-husband. And during 2020, March 6th of 2020, let the record show, I quit my corporate accounting job.
Yay.
And thank you. Yeah, that was like the Lean Fi point. We did hit Fi very briefly in 2020 because our spending had gone down. But then our spending went way up because we decided to do digital nomad trip for 2 years. I've done part-time like personal finance coaching, Finance Rocks. I'm known on the internet, ROX for Roxanne. And yeah, so Lean Fi for the last 5 years.
Okay. And then talk about the travel time frame. So a couple years, any highlights?
Yeah, two of the last 3 years, all over the US, from California to Maine down to Georgia and then back up to Montana. My dog has gotten to play in both the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, which is pretty rare. So
nice. Was this like an RV type thing or what was the
So moment? It was I converted a minivan to a camper, but it was mostly month-long Airbnb stays since we were still both working. And yeah, ate 100 donuts in one of the years.
Wow.
So, like everywhere I went, looked up the best donuts.
Okay, all through the year, not like in one sitting?
No. I wish.
So where are the best donuts in Longmont then?
Oh, Landline for sure. The brown butter donut. It tastes like caramel, and it's actually a potato donut. So the texture is a little different, but delicious.
All right.
Write that down.
Well, and I guess it's a good point to mention. You live in Longmont now, right?
Yes, as of December.
Okay. So tell us about, like, moving to Longmont. Like, was it on your radar before? How'd you end up there?
Funny that you're asking me that, Doug. I've known Doug for a while. He has always spoken highly of the co-working place. I do also have family. I have a pair of grandmas in Denver and an uncle in Louisville. So I have some family nearby. And yeah. So I thought it was a good time for a fresh start. So
gotcha.
I picked Longmont.
Was it easy to get, like, integrated into the community and everything since you knew
the
fire
aspect?
No,
they're awful. They're wonderful. It's been great. People are so supportive. And, yeah, I don't know if I'm friendly or they are, but it has worked.
Gotcha. And let's see. Well, do you guys have any?
I would encourage anybody to go and visit Longmont. It's such a good time. I was there. I went to one of the potlucks, I guess those are on, is it Tuesday night? Every Tuesday you guys do that? And met Roxanne there, remembered her, and yeah, it's such a good time. And there's always people there visiting who are there for a period of weeks to see if they like it, to see if they want to move there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how many hundreds of five people do you guys have in that area now? Do you even know?
Don't make it sound weird.
No, it's not weird. It's awesome. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Do you know, though, how many, like, people?
I don't think it's even in the hundreds, unless
really?
They're a silent minority.
Okay.
But, you know, there's dozens, and a lot of them are come through our co-owners, Carl and Mindy, because they're super welcoming, and Carl used to be on the Mile High 5 podcast, so people just hear about it, and then they'll message, and sometimes they'll message both me and Carl via the co-working email address, and I'm always like, who's this person? Carl's like, hey, you can come stay at our house.
Yeah.
So they're just so
that's
welcoming.
That's how I came through, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the right way to do it if you want to make a lot of friends, and that's why the Jensens have a lot more friends than me, and I just kind of benefit from knowing
that
him.
Doesn't mean he's not friendly, guys. He's very friendly.
Yeah, I'm just like a little more, you know, harder to crack the shell.
Well, I want to go back to some of the lean fi portion, because, like, that is, it's right on the edge, right? So some people are nervous to take the plunge. What gave you the confidence to, like, stop your corporate job and do something else?
So I had the added benefit of my ex was still working full time as a software developer. So that helps make it easy. But in general, I don't know. I had felt financial security well before that point. We had bought a house in cash, $210,000. Oh gosh, that was a long time ago now, 2014.
The old days,
yeah, the old days. And so then at that point, dinks with no mortgage. So I was like, yeah, we're good. Ever since then, I felt very comfortable with spending money. And I'm still very frugal. I do a lot of the things that I did, like during the payoff debt phase. There was $49,000 of, like, student loans and vehicle stuff. But yeah, ever since then, I felt very secure. I don't know exactly why that is, but I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, probably sometimes. Because you were an accountant and you know the math. I mean, you understand the numbers, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. My spreadsheet probably helps. So have a massive spreadsheet, multiple tabs. I don't have to tell you guys.
And you did some coaching stuff. And can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I do just very part-time budget coaching. So it's like even daily habits. So I'll be like, hey, what did you buy today? And my clients will, like, list out what they bought for the day, and then we do, like, monthly net worth and budget tracking. So yeah, it's very, like, granular level, which I really enjoy, and it's really focused. It's more like a passion project, really. You know, like, I want to help people that are kind of struggling a little bit more. I don't do, like, the investing stuff as much, although I enjoy talking about it. I feel like my niche is helping people that are struggling.
Okay. And I'll ask a question. We could cut it out if we need to. So You hit the lean fi point, and then you stopped working. It seems like you got divorced along the way. Mm-hmm. Are you at a point, like, would you need to start working again? Do you have more money now than you did before? I don't know how you managed with the finances as a couple. If you don't want to answer, we could just move on.
Yeah, no, that's okay. We're both lean fi. It was mostly a 50-50 split. Still in process, technically.
Okay.
Almost there, but bringing it across the finish line. But no, it's good. What was the other part of your question? How do we manage it?
Oh, you're still lean fi because it was kind of like 50-50 before, yeah. Still 50-50.
You didn't have to start over. When
no,
you're
no. Oh my gosh. I'm grateful for that all the time. Like, I read stories about people that are going through divorce and like, they're like, oh my gosh, I've got no money. I don't know where anything is. I was the finance one. I knew where everything was and knew how to manage everything. So yeah, I was really fortunate on that side of things.
Perfect. All right. And you're actually going to do a little set for us, but can you talk a little bit about your stand-up and comedy work that you do?
Yeah, how'd you get into that?
Oh, well, that's one of my jokes for later.
Oh, okay.
I guess I can tell you now. Well, I've always been funny. It's a natural skill. No, I don't know. I realized I was funny, not during accounting school, but during accounting like team meetings when I was at work, and I would just absolutely crush. You know how you kind of just assume that like the things that come easy to you are kind of easy for everybody and everyone's good at them. The sweet older ladies that I worked with in accounting were not as funny as me. So I was like, oh my gosh, I should take this on the road. So then I did. I've done several comedy writing courses since becoming Lean 5. That's been probably one of the main projects that I've done since then. So I was fortunate that there was a comedy club in Bozeman, Montana. And so I did their stand-up 101, got a lot of experience doing open mics there. And I find it to be such a joyful hobby. And it really is like a social sport. Like, I was not expecting it, but like, I'll constantly be like sending my brothers and friends like jokes and being like, hey, is this funny? And sometimes they're like, yeah. Sometimes they're going to like keep working on it.
All right. Well, cool. Before we send it over to you, Pete, thank you for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Is there anywhere that you want to send people? Do you have a blog or anything?
Well, we've covered that on other Mile High podcasts. So I direct them to past Mile Highs to find those Easter eggs.
Perfect. And if you want to get in touch with Pete, you can just send an email to Carl or Mindy. They'll route it right over. And then, Kristen, where can people find you?
These days, I'm busy over on my website at fivefriendstravel.com. We just launched a trip to Turkey yesterday, putting a group of 25 people together to head over next summer. We're doing some cruises. We're heading to Morocco here in a few months. Lots of fun stuff coming up.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you well. And we'll scoot out of here and we'll move the microphone and then I'll turn it over to Roxanne here.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right. As you know, Roxanne is going to do a set. So come on up.
Thank you, Doug. So this is no pressure at all, right? Like, just talk about how funny you are and then have to deliver the goods like right away. Ouch. Yeah, well, thank you guys for, you know, letting me come up here and do some jokes. Thank you, Stephen, for letting me come up here and tell some jokes on Wednesday. So let's see, I already talked about how funny I am. I already talked about how I learned humor and being funny. I will say that after I discovered how funny I am in accounting, it occurred to me that maybe I might have been a personality hire. and I'm not sure that that's a good thing, but... So you guys know my name's Roxanne. I have a very sexy name, which is a little awkward because my personality is more like sweaty and uptight. And you guys probably know the song. Roxanne. Yeah. I used to be really embarrassed about that because I grew up in a very Christian household and, you know, it's about a prostitute. Yeah. Okay. So you're following me. Good. So I used to be really embarrassed about it, but you know, now that I'm like grown, I'm like, well, girls got to make some money. I feel like we should maybe like withhold our judgment, like at least until we know what her gross income is. Sorry, I made a gross income joke on this the Lord's Day, the Sabbath. I mean Wednesday. So we're all a very frugal bunch. Yeah, I'm frugal too. I know I'm frugal because in my house I have all just like furniture and no pieces. Okay, all right, you guys are mixed on that. That's okay, that's all right. I also know I'm frugal because I like to just watch movies and not films. And then I also will say things like, oh yeah, I've been on a big cabbage kick lately. That might just be getting older, I guess. Maybe that's not frugal, just getting older. But yeah, so on a kind of serious note, like I mentioned, growing up, a little bit stressful. My parents would like run out of money. And I was lucky though, because I have grandparents on both sides that would bail us out. But they always would say that it was like the last time they were going to bail us out. So it was like run out of money, grandparents would bail them out, say it was the last time, run out of money. And you know, it really taught me an important lesson about family, you know, that grandparents are liars. I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for my grandparents, though. They are the best. But okay, so I do have a confession. One of my 2025 goals is to write the dirtiest accounting joke of all time. And I may have already done it. And if this is not the funniest or the dirtiest accounting joke you've ever heard, please let me know after so I know that I need to keep working on it. So what do you need to know about accounting? Oh, this does not do well in open mics, by the way. What do you need to know about accounting? They don't love that. But in accounting, there's two parts to every journal entry, a debit and a credit. So let's say you're buying $100 in bulk deodorant, which you guys probably buy as well, right? No? So your deodorant supplies would go up $100, a debit, and your cash would go down $100, a credit. And it's for this reason that they call it double entry accounting. And you would know about double entry accounting because you would know about double entry because that's how your mama spends her weekends. Okay, I'm Roxanne. Thank you, everybody.